Yo, what's up, everybody? Today we are back with another podcast episode. We have a very special guest, Steven Glickman. Why don't you introduce yourself a little bit? Tell them what you do, you know, some of the things that you've done, and yeah.
Sure, pal. Most people know me for playing Gustavo Rock on the Nickelodeon series Big Time Rush for 4 or 5 years, and for playing Pigeon Toady in the 2016 Warner Brothers animated film Storks. Those are probably the two big ones. Those are the ones that I get hit up about the most. Mm-hmm. Maybe Workaholics on Comedy Central and a couple other ones here and there, but those are the two big ones, Big Time Rush and Storks.
Yeah, that's where we're Big Time Rush. We're a big fan, so that's where we found you out. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
So I wanted to start off by saying, you know, talk about your music a little bit. You've been making an album, right?
Yeah.
Released the cover, How to Save a Life. Before you released that, I hadn't really listened to it in depth. And then I listened to the lyrics and realized that it has like a deep meaning to it. And I know you had a personal story to it, right? If you're comfortable with it, would you like to share that?
Sure, of course. I always liked the song when it came out. I thought it was like a nice song, but I really didn't pay that much attention to it. And then when I started recording this album, I just would ask people, hey, tell me if I was going to do covers, like, who would you want to hear? What would you want to hear? And for some reason, How to Save a Life just kept popping up again and again and again and again and again. And it was getting upvoted a lot. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll listen to it. And then I listened to it kind of like as an adult or just, you know, as a, with more experience than I've had from earlier when it first came out. And I was like, oh my God, this song is basically instructions on how to talk to somebody that has addiction or is considering like suicide or things like that. And I had a friend who committed suicide a couple years ago named Brody Stevens, a very big stand-up comedian, and he was best friends with Zach Galifianakis, and he was in The Hangover, and he was like such a positive and funny, just hysterical person, and he was beloved by so many people. And it was the first time I ever realized that, like, when people commit suicide, it's not because, a lot of times it's not because they don't think anybody loves them, it's because they have trouble loving themselves. And which was the case with Brody, because when he passed away at his funeral, it was literally the cast of The Hangover. The New York Yankees were there. All the late night talk show hosts were there. I mean, it was like the biggest star-studded thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, it was just crazy, crazy. So, it was a very emotional time. And this song brought all of that like right up to the surface. Mm. And I was like, I would sing through it and I would get like emotional while I was doing it. I was like, this is not gonna work. Like, I can't be getting sad while I'm singing. Like, that's not how, like, you, it's good to be connected emotionally to the songs that you're working on, but I was like, this is gonna be too heavy. And I didn't want to play it on the piano because the song was played on the piano, the original. So I was like, this should be done on guitar. And so I called Kendall from Big Time Rush, and I was like, yo, I know you produced a lot of tracks for Heffron Drive back in the day, and for, you know, and he produced stuff for Big Time Rush back in the day too. I was like, you know, would you consider doing this? And he was like, yeah, let's do it on, I'll play guitar, I'll sing backup, you know, I'll sing harmonies, I'll play bass on it, and I'll play, like, you know, drums a little bit. And so we it was a full collab between the two of us, which I know I'm going on forever, but it, because working with Kendall is such a happy and uplifting thing for me, and like, we care about each other so much. We're, you know, we've been friends for so long. It took a song that was sad and kind of like made it a little more hopeful. And even though it was like difficult sometimes to sing it, it was like, at least we were doing, I was doing it with somebody that made me happy. So it had some, it was easier than just doing it myself. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I know.
So, yeah, saying. Yeah. And then the album is a really, it's something I've always wanted to do. But I always had a million reasons why I shouldn't do it, because it's like, who wants to, I don't want to use bad language on your podcast.
No, you're good.
It's like, who cares? It's about the manager of Big Time Rush doing an album. Like, that's not what people want, you know? And it just like, it was like, you know, there's a million reasons to like, be like, oh, well, this is a stupid choice. But then, you know, I just kind of kept being like, you know what? Let's record one more song. Let's do one more. And now the album is at 12 songs, fully mastered, with musicians playing on it from Foo Fighters, Radiohead, REM, Pink. One of her musicians plays on it. A couple of American Idol people came in, and it's so cool. Like, it's such a cool experience. I love it. I'm very excited.
That's great to hear.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the cover. I've been actually listening to it a lot, you know, How to Save a Life. I thought it sounded amazing, and I found out, you know, that you had it through TikTok, which is another thing I wanted to talk to you about, but I'll get into that in a minute. Sure. But about the music, did you say you're having a song with Logan, or was I mistaken?
Yeah, no. Logan and I talked about doing a song a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I think there was a chat about it being an old Pearl Jam song for us to team up on, which would be a cool way to go. Yeah. But we're still kind of batting around which song it's gonna be, because but I think this, so far we're at like 15 or 16,000 streams on Spotify. Wow. And about 500 hours of play on TikTok, so that's enough of a way to convince him, if you know, like he's already down. But I, you know, it's just tricky with Logan sometimes, because he doesn't, he hasn't been living in California. So he was in the Netherlands, I believe, or in Sweden or Norway with his girlfriend for most of the pandemic. So we were communicating, but it would be like super late at night or super early in the morning for me. So communication was a little harder. And Kendall lives down the street, so yeah, it's a little easier with him. But yeah, Logan and I, we're definitely going to do something. We've got it. Awesome. You know?
Yeah.
That'd be so cool.
Do you want to go ahead and ask some of yours?
I'm such a huge fan of Big Time Rush and your brilliant work as the character Gustavo Rock. Like, sir, you were like, without kidding, you were such an integral part of my childhood. Like, I can't express my love for the show and everything that you and the cast and the crew behind it did. So, like, personally, just want to start out by saying thank you.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. That's very kind of you.
Yeah, so do you want to talk about Big Time Rush now, or should we cover that part?
Yeah, let's go. Let's head into it.
Sure, of course. I'm open. You can ask me anything. I'm open book.
All right.
Great. How did you first become sort of involved in the show, or getting cast as Gustavo Rock?
I cannot talk about that. I'm just kidding. I auditioned. Oh no! Okay, so I went in and had a meeting with the head of the casting department for animation at Nickelodeon, and it was like a general meeting. That's the thing that they do in Hollywood, is you sit down with somebody. There's no plan of why you would work together, how you'd work together. It's just a general. You just talk about yourself. You tell them funny stories. Maybe you do a couple funny voices, you know, but like, it's pretty fun. And I did that. We had a great time, me and this woman named Sarah Noonan. And when we were finishing the meeting, she was like, just so you know, and this was for animation. She was like, just so you know, you're going to be a part of Nickelodeon for the rest of your life. And I was like, okay. She was like, we're going to find something. We're going to find you something. And I was like, all right, whatever. And then Scott Fellows, who normally worked in animation, was doing Big Time Rush and was having trouble casting Gustavo. They had cast someone to play the role, and they did a table read, and they thought he was too creepy in the table read. So they had to fire him on a Thursday and have auditions Friday so that they could have Gustavo shooting Monday.
Wow.
And, which is pretty crazy. And so I went in on Friday over at Paramount Studios. I thought it was animated because I was like, it's Nickelodeon. I was just there for animation, you know? And so she had put my name in because she was like, oh, you got to see Steven. So I go in and I'm wearing a hoodie, like this hoodie I'm wearing right now. It's just, you know, like a skater hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
Every single person at the audition was wearing a suit and tie. Every single person. And they all had gray hair, and I did not have gray hair. I was bald, you know, with a beard. And they were all kinds of like, you know, they were very serious. And I went in, I did my audition. I got a lot of laughs. I made up some pretty funny jokes in the room. And then we said our goodbyes. I walked out. I started walking across the lot. And there's a TV show on the lot called Monk that used to be on TV, mm-hmm. with Tony Shalhoub. Mm-hmm. And I had worked on Monk in the art department, like as in the printing department. Like, it was just a just a regular job. And I was walking by, and he was like, hey, what are you doing? What are you working on a show today? And I was like, oh, Tony, I auditioned for Nickelodeon. And he was like, oh yeah, that's cool. And while I was standing there, my phone rang, and it was the casting office, and they were like, get back to casting. We have a callback. You have a callback right now. And I was like, what? I was like, I just did the audition like 10 minutes ago. And so I went back in, and they were like, were you still on the lot? And I was like, yeah, I was over on the Monk set hanging out with Tony Shalhoub's, you know, me and Shalhoub's are old friends. We play racquetball together every other Thursday. And they were, which is not true. And they were all laughing. And then they had me do the scene again. And then the next day they called and they were like, you have the part. You got it. Get your ass over to the, get your ass over to costumes. And I went, got fitted for my costume, and then Monday started filming and never stopped, you know, for 5 years. It's crazy.
Awesome. That's an insane story to hear. That's
really ridiculous.
That fast.
Man, it can change. So life in that business can change so quickly. It's ridiculous. It's amazing.
The question that I'm sure you probably knew was coming, and I know it's been answered 100 times, but do you think eventually in the future there will be some kind of reunion, or, you know, they'll make a new song or something like that?
Yes, 100% I believe it. And the reason that I believe it is because here's why. Because when Big Time Rush was on TV, it was very expensive to make that show. And it was also like a big headache at the time for the network, because they had to work with the record label. So they were constantly fighting with the record label about who gets time and blah, 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 and all that kind of nonsense of how that stuff works. And the executives at the network kind of vowed to never do another TV show where they had to deal with a record label, because, and they haven't done one since. There hasn't been another, you know, music boy band kind of show. Yeah. I think they tried a little bit with Victoria Justice, but not really, you know?
Right.
So anyways, all those people, those executives, all of them have been fired. They're almost none of them work at the, or fired or quit. None of them work there anymore. And there's a whole new crew of people that run the network now, and they know how much everybody loves the show. And the guys are definitely on board to, you know, to do something. Me and Tanya, of course, and the rest of us, we're all down to go back, do, you know, do something, do one episode, a big, you know, reunion, or do an album, or do something. You know, I'm sure everybody is down. I think there was going to be something maybe that was going to happen in 2020, but then coronavirus, you know, kind of messed things up. So I think the future, it seems more possible that there may be something, you know?
Yeah. And the fan base, I feel like, is so strong. Like for Big Time Rush, there's so many people who are still just loving it. And yeah, I think everyone will be so excited, you know, if that happens, and just be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense, because it's like, you guys are, how old are you guys?
I'm 19.
18 now. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So the show came out when you guys were like 7 or 8 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And now the most important, like, biggest demographic in the world that everybody wants to capture is 16 to 24. Mm-hmm. So you guys are right in the middle of that. That's where most of all the fans of Big Time Rush are. Yeah. And so that's why, like, I think there's so much heat around it still, or at this point, as opposed to, like, you know, something like Drake and Josh, which came before, you know, a little too far before you guys. It's like, this is like, and it's still a possibility that there's enough fan love out there that we could get something. I think, at least I believe that.
Yeah, I agree fully.
Yeah, because it does touch upon a lot of demographics. Because when the show came out, like, boys like my age, like from like 6 through 12, loved watching the show because the dogs, like, it was just like a dude show. But then also, like, teenage girls were like, oh, the guys in Big Time Rush are cute, and they like their music. So it touched, like, so many people were able to connect and enjoy the show because it was just totally there for everyone.
I remember when we were, I think we were like a month into the show being on TV, and a network executive came in and was like, we're killing boys. Like, boys, guys love watching this show. And I remember being like, okay, why is that like a big deal? And they were like, because it's like, obviously girls are going to be into this, but if guys are into it, that means we're hitting notes on, you know, where, whether it's like, you know, Gustavo being like a funny character with the guys, or it's the interactions between the guys, or it's them trying to date girls, like all that kind of stuff played really well. It's cool, man. It was lightning in a bottle, you know. It was exciting, very exciting, you know.
Yeah,
for sure.
I actually went, this is random, but I actually went to one of the concerts back in when I was in fourth grade.
Same.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I was a really big fan. Me and, I didn't know Aiden until, middle school, but me and my other friend, Philip, we always talked about it. We actually sang a Big Time Rush song in like a little mini concert thing for a fundraiser. It was, yeah.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
That's amazing. We did, I only went to two of their concerts because it was a little too intense. I went to, and also those assholes would call me out on stage in front of everyone and be like, hey, you guys watch our show? And everyone would be like, ah! They'd be like, right in the middle of the audience, that's where Gustavo's sitting. Go say hi to Gustavo. And all the kids in the audience would turn around and be like, ah! And I'd be like, ah! It was like pretty crazy. That was pretty intense.
That's awesome.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I went to go see them when they were like, I think their first live appearance. And I actually dressed up as Gustavo because I figured no one would recognize me if I didn't dress up as my character.
Yeah.
And I thought like, oh, you know, there'll be like a couple hundred people there, maybe like 200 people, and I'll show up and I'll be in the costume and then people will be like, oh my God, that's him. You know, and like, that'll be like a cool, fun thing. And I got there and there were 5,000 people at this mall to watch these guys do like 3 songs and some bad choreography, and there I'm standing in a gold hoodie with a fur lining and big yellow glasses and the hat and a gold watch, and I was just like, I have to get out of here, like I am in danger. This is a bad idea. It was crazy. Oh my God.
What was really the inspiration behind the character of Gustavo? Was there anyone that like Scott Fellows or Savage Steve Holland really like drew him off of to like, or like told you like sort of emulate this?
Not really. I think they had written him as an angry, just kind of a straight up angry record producer. I brought the style of the clothing for the character, the hats, all that kind of stuff, that all came from me, literally. Like, I literally got sponsored by Kangol so I could wear their hats on the show. Wow. Because Nickelodeon couldn't afford the hats because they would need at least 3 of each color for me to wear it on the show, because I get hit in the face with a pie, ruins the hat, but, you know, you have to get another one. So I got myself sponsored by them so that they would take care of all of our stuff. But the character, in the process of creating the character, I got to go and spend some time with some record producers to like learn about the business. And it was pretty crazy. I got to spend time with the RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan.
No way.
And I got to be in the studio with him while Wu-Tang was recording an album, which was...
That's amazing.
Something I will never forget as long as I live. That was very memorable. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot from them, from watching the way that they were doing kind of what they were doing. I also got to meet and have a nice little chat with Suge Knight before he went to prison.
What?
That was pretty serious.
So they just threw you in the deep end with gangster rap producers? That's amazing. Wow.
Well, honestly, it wasn't Nickelodeon setting it up. It was people, like, the only one that Nickelodeon set up was Mandy Moore and Hilary Duff's producer. Who was a big record executive at Sony. They let me go and spend a day with him, and it was really cool. And I learned like a lot of great stuff. It was very fun. But then once the show came out, and Chris Kirkpatrick from NSYNC called me and gave me some advice and stuff like that on the character and things. But then once the show was on, I started getting invited to like hang with different actual like big record producers, and it was intense, man. It was pretty intense. I just kind of personally, I watched there was a show called Making the Band with P. Diddy.
Yeah.
And I remember watching P. Diddy and just being like, I just want to be the white P. Diddy. That's all I wanted to be. I just wanted to be a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that in like an offensive way, but like I just wanted to bring his like gravitas of like the way that he is with other people. Like, he's tough. He's really tough. Mm-hmm. But he, if you do right by, you know, by P. Diddy, he gives you amazing things that Sean could change your entire life. So that's kind of the way that the character was built, is a guy who is very tough, but it's like, if you win him over, he'll buy you a car, you know?
Right, right.
So interesting. That's an interesting character.
That's sure. Amazing to sort of draw Gustavo back to P. Diddy from making the band, because he's sort of like Dave Chappelle's sketch of P. Diddy's making the band. Like, he's a super exaggerated guy, and he's so out there. And but you also give him like this real human connection to the dogs. Like, they really grow on him, and there's just this family dynamic as the show builds.
Yeah, you know, a thing that helped is when, you know, for the first season of the show, most of the first season was shot before it came out. So we were all basically all unknowns at that point. So it was like, I had a little more experience than one or two of the guys, because I'd done a couple little TV things and I'd done some work on Broadway and stuff. So I had some bigger, you know, stuff. And then some of the guys had done some really crazy, had been on some big crazy sets, like Kendall was the stand-in for Haley Joel Osment in the movie AI with Steven Spielberg, that was Steven Spielberg produced. So he got to spend his childhood on a massive, massive set. And then Logan, I think, had done Friday Night Lights or something like that. So they Carlos had done Menudo, Making Menudo or something. And then James had done an episode of iCarly. So everyone had done something, but we were all still relatively unknown. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, there's real love between me and these guys, because we all watched each other come up, you know, which was pretty cool. It was pretty neat.
Yeah.
So
one thing I wanted to talk about is you've had a lot of success on TikTok. And a lot of people have shown that TikTok helps promote either, in your case, music and stuff. Has it shown, has it helped your music, like when you promote it and stuff?
I mean, TikTok is crazy. Mm. TikTok is crazy. It is the craziest. It's the craziest social media thing I've never experienced anything like it, man. It's nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you never know what's going to blow up. You never know what's going to happen. Like, I have sat at the piano and done a cover. I'll, you know, do like five covers, right?
Mm.
I'll post all five. One will get, 2,000 views. One will get 3,000. One will do 500 views. One will do, 800, and then one will do, 5.8 million.
Right.
And you're like, what? Like, what did I do? How did I get, why? Like, how and why? And trying to figure out the hows and whys has been like a big, thing to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's been super weird, man. I mean, like that, for example, like How to Save a Life, right? That's got 500 hours of play for a minute song. That's pretty big.
Yeah.
About a week ago, I put out 22 seconds of me singing Crazy by Gnarls Barkley. 22 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The song's not even out for people to go and get on Spotify. It's just the first 22 seconds of me singing the song. That video has 3,000 hours of play. 3,000 hours.
That's
is
crazy.
A crazy amount of time.
And it's just that 20-second snippet, right?
That's just it.
Wow,
I mean, and then what's crazy is, which is mind-blowing, I booked a job today because of that song.
Really?
Like, I booked a job today with a sponsor because they saw the video and went, all right, well, it has 700,000 views and it's, Steven lip syncing like anybody can do. Mm-hmm. So great. Maybe we should work together. And they wrote me and they were like, oh yeah, maybe we should work together. We saw you lip sync to that song. And I wrote back, I was like, I'm not lip syncing. That's me singing. That's actually me singing. I'm not lipping anything. I'm just singing. And the guy was like, oh shit. Okay. Well then maybe we really should work together and take this more seriously. And then they made me an offer today, which was so cool. So like, it is pretty crazy, man. It is pretty crazy. I mean, not to jump all over the place, but I've watched people's lives completely change using TikTok. Like, I know a girl who, you know, has made millions and millions of dollars because of TikTok. Like, who is from some podunk tiny little town in Florida and just paid her sister's college tuition off with it. Like, it's crazy, man. It is a crazy thing. Because I think the main thing is it's like something like Instagram. If you have 1,000 followers, the chance your video is going to get more than 1,000 views is almost next to impossible.
Yeah.
It just is. It's like it's an echo chamber, you know, you're only playing to your own people. But TikTok, it's like you can have 200 followers and may have a video that does 1 million views. Like I had 300,000 followers and I made a video that got 17 million views.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Mm-hmm. It's a crazy thing. I love it. And the music side of it has been very, very good. People are very accepting. And I also noticed something else that's weird about TikTok, which I really like, is if somebody has a disability, or if they are like, you know, like they weigh like 700 pounds, or they're like, you know, they have some sort of thing that, you know, that they're extremely, you know, disabled, or they've got, they were born a different way, they're missing their hands, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They make a video on Instagram. The comment section is disgusting.
Yeah.
It's rough. If they make that same video and they put it up on YouTube, it's even worse. Even worse. But if they put it on TikTok, 99% of the time, all the comments are positive. And they're like, no, it's, if you body shame somebody on TikTok, you should just pack your bags and move to another planet. Like, they just come for you. Like, it is a really, it's a very positive community on there, as opposed to every other social media. I mean, you compare my comment section there with my comment section on Facebook, and it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm super impressed.
It opens a lot of opportunities, like you said, with the person who makes millions. I feel like TikTok, the opportunities that it creates are incredible. Like, I was able to start this podcast and reach out to so many people who I probably would have never been able to talk to. And I just think it's an awesome app.
Well, it's really smart and very, it's a good entrepreneurial thing, because what's cool about podcasting is, like, we do this interview, right? Mm-hmm. Then the next person you go to, you go, hey, I just had Steven Glickman, who's got 1.2 million on TikTok. He just did our show. Do you want to come do our show? And most of them are going to say yes.
Right.
Because then you can take both of those credits, go to the next person and be like, and that's I have a podcast I've been doing now for 4 years. That's how we do our show is every time we get somebody, we go to the next person, say who we just got. And it just keeps growing and growing, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Good
for you guys. Good for you guys.
Thanks. What's one of the craziest experiences, hopping onto a little bit of Big Time Rush again, what's one of the craziest experiences you've had while recording, or even after recording, or just not even craziest, but a good experience even? Like, one of your favorite?
Probably the biggest, one of the experiences that changed my life probably the most while filming was Snoop Dogg on the show, and a lot of things happened when he was on the show that affected me long term. The story about him and I doing things after we rapped that he is famous for doing, with certain medical things and stuff, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That story has been seen, like, that story, I've told it now on every form of social media. It was on my stand-up album from a couple of years ago. I've told it on TV numerous times. It continues to live on as a really crazy thing. And the fact that I cried in front of him because I had a panic attack because I couldn't handle it. I have now seen Snoop Dogg many times since the incident. And he every time calls me out in front of everyone around and goes, yo, I smoked this dude up and he cried like a baby, and everybody laughs every time, and he thinks it's hilarious. It's a very funny thing to have walked away from. Yeah. So that was one. And then the other crazy thing that happened on the set turned to me and he was like, oh, I like your Nikes. And I was like, oh, thanks. And I was like, I just bought them. And he was like, bought them? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, why? And I was like, why? Why not? Why? How else would I get them? And he was like, why don't you just call them and tell them to give you the shoes? And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, you call them. You call Nike. You say, I'm on this show. I have this following. Give me shoes. And then they're giving you some shoes. And I was like, who do I call? He was like, I don't know. You figure it out. Figure that part out. And I was like, okay. And I took his advice. I was the only person in the cast. He said this to a bunch of us. I was the only person that listened to him. And I called Nike and I said, hey, this is a weird thing to say, but give me your shoes. I'm on TV and I'd like to have your shoes, please. And we're like, all right, what are you doing this week? And I was like, nothing. And they were like, come down to the shop. And I went to their workshop and they gave me 7 pairs of Nikes that are like one of a kind pieces or super limited edition.
Wow.
And then I was like, oh, I'm gonna call everyone. And yeah. I did. And those conversations got me my most of my home is stuff that is either, you know, was part of a deal or part of some sort of thing. I mean, there's lots of things I've had to buy for myself, but there's also stuff like, you know, I've done deals, like brand deals with so many people, and I've gotten better at it. And I, you know, he really kind of tipped me off on how to monetize anything, you know, and I didn't really know how to do that. Yeah. Like that real, also, it's like, you know, it's like people go like, oh yeah, but you got to get paid. You know? You got to get paid for getting stuff, you know, you got to show off stuff. But Nike isn't paying me to do something like that. But you know who will pay me? Tums and Pepto Bismol and NyQuil and Folgers Coffee. Like those companies, those are the companies that no one talks to. No celebrity person calls Folgers Coffee and bothers them and tries to get them to do a brand deal. Do you know what I mean? Right, and it's like, that's why I've been able to be successful in that way, is because I took some notes from a guy who's a real master and figured out to do some of it. So yeah, it was cool, man. It was cool. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Snoop Dogg. Now, there's been a lot of sort of, there were a lot of cameos on the show. Is Snoop Dogg your favorite, or does like Fabio or any of the other ones sort of come in?
Well, Fabio and I were friends already before the show.
Wow.
Yeah, we've been friends for probably 15, 16 years.
Wow.
And we see each other. I just saw him a couple months ago. We went and had lunch together, and it was awesome. He is fascinating. He's my favorite. Out of all the cameos that we had, he's my favorite because he's like a real good friend, and he loves giving me crap, and he would come over. He would go, Steven, I need your help, okay? I need your help. It's an emergency, Steven. I need your help. And I'd be like, what is it? He'd go, come to the craft service table, please. It's a huge emergency. Everyone, and he'd go on the headset, everyone, please get Steven to come to craft service. I need his help, please, an emergency. And then I would get over to the service table, and I'd be like, what is it? What's up, Bobby? What's wrong? Like, I need to like eat like a cookie or something, and I know you like a big fat guy, so you know like what is the best cookies. So like, what is that, the best cookies? Because I never have a cookie ever in my whole life, but I decide like right now I'm going to try one. So like, why don't you and me of all the cookies? What is like the best of all the cookies? And I'd be like, man, fuck you. But he would do that to me all the time, constantly. Like he'd be like, I'd be like, oh, Fabio, what are you having for what's going over there? You know, like having a snack. And he'd be like, this is called a salad. It has a lettuce in it. You ever heard of lettuce, Steven? And I'd be like, so mean and so funny. Oh, and it was like, or you know, or like I'd say to him, I said to him one time, he said he told me he had never eaten birthday cake.
Really?
I was like, what are you, some sort of psychopath? You never had birthday cake? What's the matter with you? And he was like, I don't eat birthday cake. I'm not going to ever have birthday cake. And I was like, if you come to my birthday, you have to eat birthday cake. And he was like, if I come to your birthday, you lucky I come to your birthday. Like, if I show up, everyone be like, oh, it's Fabio, you know, maybe I'll grab your mom's ass, you know. I was like, please don't do that. we had known each other already. We'd already worked together and had a fun time together on a couple of weird projects. But the time Rush gave us a chance to like become friends where we had like real time. You're just sitting around on the set bored. And we be a lot closer, and we're still very close, which is really cool.
That's awesome.
All right, so he was your favorite cameo. Now, was there a favorite episode to shoot and favorite Big Time Rush song?
Favorite Big Time Rush song, Paralyzed, which never came out anywhere else besides the show.
Only on the show, right, when they're with the punk rock chick. Yeah.
It was such a badass song.
Yeah,
they were great. Worldwide is probably their best written song.
Mm-hmm.
And best episode to me is probably Big Time Terror, because that's the one where I got to spend the night over, like do the sleepover at their house.
Yeah,
and that was so fun because I had so much to do. And there was so much to play with, and we had so much fun. Just, I was having a very good time. That is one of my favorite ones. And the superhero episode, where I become Super Gustavo, and we become the Supertastic Super Six.
Mm-hmm.
That was a dream come true, because I got to fly for the first time. And the only time I've ever flown in anything. And it was way too much fun. It was like my favorite. That was my favorite, probably. Yeah.
That's great.
Also, that episode, crazy little behind-the-scenes info, Big Time Superheroes was written by Jessica Gao. Jessica Gao went on from writing Big Time Rush. She left after that season to write a little television show called Star Wars: The Clone Wars.
No.
And then left that show to write a television show called Rick and Morty, where she won an Emmy for writing the Pickle Rick episode. And then she got hired by Disney to write She-Hulk, the new She-Hulk television show for Marvel. So she's amazing. She's like one of my favorite writers in the whole world. I got to work with her, which is crazy. So it was crazy. You know what? Another weird one. The first job I ever had in the business, like a TV job, was I was on this really bad show on ABC, the guys who directed the show were Anthony Russo, the Russo brothers, who directed Endgame and Infinity War, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah, and now they're directing Sherry with Sierra Bravo, right?
Yeah. Oh my God, that looks amazing, and she's such a wonderful person. She deserves it, man. That is, we all knew, everyone on that cast knew she was going to be the big breakout. Like, you know, she was gonna pop faster than anybody else.
Yeah, that's awesome. She was on like a YouTube show that I think saw on another streaming platform now called Wayne, which nobody saw, but she was amazing in. Like, I think she's really ready to break out. Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it during quarantine. I watched it on Amazon Prime, and I was like, what? How did I miss? Because it was a YouTube Red show, and no one watched YouTube Red. But now people get to watch it because it's on Hulu or Amazon Prime. She's very good in it, too.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure we could go on. We could go on for questions for hours, but I think that it's time to wrap it up. And honestly, that was amazing. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all these incredible stories. It was great talking to you. Before we head out, do you want to link or tell us what your social medias are? So I'll link them down below so everyone can go and check out your music, your Instagram, everything like that.
Cool. Absolutely. Thanks, guys. And you guys are great at this. Keep it going. Don't lag. Got to keep making more of these. You can always get me at Stephen Glickman, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and on TikTok. I'm Stephen K. Glickman, because some other son of a bitch stole my name. And then if you want to check out my podcast, you can. It is The Nighttime Show. It's available everywhere there are podcasts. We're coming up on our 200th episode, which is Kevin Smith is our 200th, which is pretty exciting. And there's lots of we did the Office cast reunion, which was super cool. We hosted that, and awesome. Lots of other really fun ones. So, you know, if you're a fan of TV stuff, you might like that too.
Yeah, so we'll make sure everyone check that out. Thank you again for coming on the show.